I'm all about reasonable revenue generation tools, Matt. You know that.
As long as they're ethical.
As long as they're ethical is right. What is up, boys? What is up, boys? There's some girls listening to this. What is up, freaks? What am I doing calling you boys?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Freaks. Nerds, geeks, outcast, whoever's listening to this podcast, welcome back. It's your boy Marty Bent here for another edition of Rabbit Hole Recap. You've already heard him already, Matt. What's going on, dude?
How's it going, guys?
It's going going good. If your emotions aren't tied to the price, the official price of Bitcoin right now, according to the TFTC.io ticker, gonna have to refresh because the price passed me. It takes a little too much time to come around. DJ, product note. Let's speed up the ticker. Price is $7,462.45. A lot lower than what it was this time last week. We're at block 600,894. The mempool that we're pulling data from is not that full right now, and the current hash rate is at 97.33 exahash per second according to the data that we're looking at, and difficulty is very high. I can't even read that number.
With the price drop yesterday, because you brought it up, I wanted to look up the number real quick. Like, if you're just a humble stat stacker, it doesn't fucking matter, right? It's just noise. Bitcoin moves up and down short term. That's the whole point of dollar cost averaging. But if you're a degenerate BitMEX trader, $181 million got liquidated in a 6-minute interval yesterday.
Ooh.
And that's the block's Larry Cermak.
Shout out, Lawmaster. 18% of a billion wiped out in minutes.
Insane.
Margin trading, freaks. If you're not a good trader, if you don't know what you're doing, most importantly, if you don't know how to manage risk, if you don't know how to manage your value at risk per trade, I'd advise against trading, especially with leverage.
99% of people will lose more money trading than stacking sats.
And you're talking to somebody who worked at a... dropped my phone there. Worked at a fund that worked trading markets. I would be hesitant to begin trading because it is a skill that takes time to learn, and no matter how smart you think you are, most people get their dicks pushed in.
With Bitcoin short term, it's fucking gambling.
Yes,
it's just fucking gambling.
Yes, it's not like is it like buying lottery tickets though? That's what a lot of people have been saying lately. You might as well be playing the lottery with Bitcoin this volatile.
Well, they were giving me, I mean, we were talking about in my comments, someone gave me shit because I said Bitcoin was high risk.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people, when I say Bitcoin, like investing in Bitcoin is high risk, Bitcoin doesn't have to fail or go to zero for you to get wrecked. Like, but that's what people don't realize. They think it's me being bearish on Bitcoin. I'm like one of the fucking biggest bulls there is. Like, I'm not fucking bearish at all.
I don't know, dude. I think you need to pump your bullishness up a little bit.
I gotta pump my bullish numbers up.
Yeah.
But like, the price can drop $1,000. The price can drop $2,000. You can get wrecked that way. But you have a medical expense that comes up. You don't have savings in your bank account. You don't have fiat to spend. You have to go into your Bitcoin. You know, your rent goes up or whatever happens, and you don't have that buffer in place. Bitcoin is in a bear market at the time when it happens, and you have to end up selling at the bottom. You look at people like Andreas Antonopoulos, where we found out after the 2017 pump that he had no Bitcoin, and the reason was because he was spending his Bitcoin in the bear market because he needed to spend it, right? So like,
keep your fiat jobs.
Exactly. Bitcoin is extremely volatile short term. It's way better risk reward ratio than fucking lottery tickets. You just might as well burn your money, and you need to be able to invest on this thing in like a 10-year time frame, and you have to be willing to take losses both on paper and also like fuck ups, like security fuck ups using Bitcoin, trying to store it securely. There will be speed bumps along the way, and you need to be able to absorb those speed bumps. Otherwise, you'll get wrecked before hyper Bitcoinization, and no one wants that.
Yeah, and if you're looking for help of custody of your Bitcoin and you want some peace of mind, the peace of mind that Matt just described, our friends at Casa are helping you out. Freaks, how confident are you in your key security Have you gotten set up with Multisig yet? Our friends at Casa have drummed up one of the smartest and most secure ways to hodl your Bitcoin. There's no KYC, no altcoins, no percentage fees on your Bitcoin, no one standing between you and your keys. It's a Bitcoin-first and security-first company. Casa's focused on Bitcoin and Lightning only and security only. They have different packages. All memberships come with a full set of hardware wallets for your Multisig, plus the Casa node, plus Faraday bags, early access to all future Casa products. And then on top of that, if you're a Diamond or Platinum member, it gets you 24/7 VIP service, dedicated client advisors, and a custom onboarding and OPSEC plan. So use the code TFTC, and you're going to get up to $250 off when you go to keys.casa/keymaster, or you can email them directly at membership@team.casa. Throw them through the ringer, ask them your hardest OPSEC questions, ask them to walk you through the process, and how they can help you. Again, go check out our friends at Casa. We got another one on the way. This is a big one, though. Cash App. They've been with us for a while. Jack was just tweeting an announcement. They got stocks on the Cash App now. We teased this last week. We didn't tease this last week. I teased this earlier this week for the Justin Moon interview, which is a great interview. Go check it out if you haven't already.
Great interview.
This episode's also brought to you by the Cash App, and as you may know by now, they have allowed you to buy stocks, so it's just added to the long list of functionalities that this app has. So you freaks already know it lets you stack sats. Use the code stacking sats to get $5 when you download, and $5 is going to go to Owls. So you can buy Bitcoin, sell Bitcoin, send it to a personal wallet, send it from a personal wallet to the app. Then on top of that, they have the Boost program. You go to your local merchants, you turn on your Boost, you spend it where the merchant is. If it's Whole Foods, you get the 5% off. Walk down the street, go get a coffee, dollar off. And now, if you want to diversify out of sats, if you want to diversify from stacking sats, you can stack stonks now too, apparently. Partial stocks too at that. You're going to be able to buy just a fraction of stocks on that. If stocks are not in your risk appetite, you don't have to touch them, but they are there for you if you want them. So use the code stacking sats. Go to your local app store today, download the Cash App, and they have all this cool functionality for you there. It's only getting more robust and more useful by the day. Again, we talk about like ethical sponsorships. Like, I use all these apps and I love them, Cash App in particular. And last but not least, we have our friends at Unchained Capital. Very excited for this weekend. I actually have Drew in town. We're gonna sit back down. We haven't sat down in like a year and a half. We're gonna talk about his Bitcoin and space piece and a bunch of other stuff, what they've been working on at Unchained. You freaks already know that they're hardcore Bitcoiners working on supporting multiple open source projects, including Slip 39, which they launched last week in conjunction with Trezor, Smart Custody, Hermit, and Caravan. We talk a lot about Multisig. Unchained is another company that offers Multisig vaults for both individuals and businesses. Unchained's collaborative custody model is a great way to improve security, create redundancy, and reduce risk of single points of failure, while also retaining your control. Unchained also offers an integrated lending platform. So if you have Bitcoin in a Multisig vault and you need a little liquidity, friends don't let friends sell Bitcoin. So they have offers the easy access to loans using Bitcoin as collateral. Collateral is always stored on chain as dedicated in a dedicated Multisig address, with the option for you to hold a key, and your Bitcoin is never rehypothecated. So go check them out at unchained-capital.com. That's unchained-capital.com.
Before we get started with today's episode, I just wanted to chat about Cash App real quick with the stocks.
Go for it.
Two things. The first thing is I fucking love that Jack announced on Twitter the stock integration, and he couldn't help himself. The last tweet in his three-tweet thread said that if you don't want stocks, you can still stack sats instead. And you showed there's like a little toggle between. Now we know why the Bitcoin tab in Cash App doesn't have the Bitcoin symbol. It just has like a graph line on it. And it's because I'm assuming when the update rolls out that they're going to put stocks and Bitcoin in that section of the Cash App. And then the other thing is, this is what we were sold. What we didn't buy, but this is what was being sold in 2017 as one of the reasons, like the pomps of the world saying tokenize the world. One of the reasons they were saying this was because they were like, well, if we tokenize equities, then, if we tokenize stocks, then you'll be able to buy a fraction of a stock, which you're not able to do usually, which is crazy, by the way, that you're not able to. But Cash App is just proven, and I think some other apps allow too, like Robinhood and stuff. I'm not sure. There was a couple other apps that have started offering fractional stocks, but like, you don't need a token for this shit. Like, it's all fully regulated anyway. You have to do KYC anyway. You might as well just have existing financial institutions give you that ability.
No. Yeah, I agree. And I believe, what was it, Ameritrade? Did they roll out something similar?
Someone did, right?
Yeah. I don't know if it was
when Ameritrade. I buy stocks, I buy whole shares.
Buy whole, be a whole share.
Channeling my American HODL there.
No, yeah, it's, and again, obviously, disclaimer, Cash App sponsored the ad.
We're just literally commenting on the ad.
But no, yeah, it's, and people are like, oh my God, like, why are they adding stocks? Like, why not? Like, again, like, we talk about banks of the future and like fintech is a hot sector, obviously.
He just rolled his eyes when he said fintech.
I did. But we're seeing companies like Square, Stripe, and other payment processors are now turning into what seems to be bank-like entities, innovating. And they move faster, it seems, at least to me. It's a much better, aesthetically pleasing user experience, at least. And then from actual functionality UX experience, it's great as well. Again, I use the Cash Card every day. I fucking love it. And
yeah, they're trying to be a bank in a pocket, basically.
Yeah, I've contemplated actually getting my direct deposit for my job to my Cash App. So I can just easily buy Bitcoin right away.
That's a crazy underrated feature, because in combination with that, you basically, any American can choose what percentage of their salary gets paid in Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
Because you just have a direct deposit in a Cash App, and then you just buy accordingly.
Yeah, auto buys. They're not there yet, but hopefully they will be at some point.
Yeah, when auto buys, Jack.
Yeah, Jack, I know you're listening. When auto buys. But not seriously, again, like bank of the future type shit. Like, I think these more forward-thinking, as much as the tech elite get shit on, the experiences that they have created and the UX flows that they've created over time are vastly superior to the incumbent banking system, in my opinion, at least compared to my Bank of America app.
Yeah, I mean, does it make the Cantillon effect less severe?
The fact that there's a lot of utility derived from the investments in these companies?
But the idea, like, part of the Cantillon effect is that you see, with the increase of money supply, you see equities and like real estate go up in value disproportionately, right? So, but the problem is that like middle class and poor people don't have like a diversified equities, you know, portfolio. So is them being able to buy like a fraction of Berkshire Hathaway or a fraction of the SPX, like just $10 here, $10 there, does that make it any better?
No, I don't think so. The Cantillon effect's all about when you get access to that money, right? So people with access to the banking window are able to take those funds and then allocate them how they wish. Ideally, they're supposed to lend them out to companies and people building companies and stuff like that, but sometimes they'll shuffle it into other assets like real estate and stock market. And by the time that money's created, those banks have bought the stocks. The Cantillon effect would dictate that the stock prices have risen before consumers buying stocks on the Cash App have had time to realize the effects of monetary-based inflation.
But they might have already been owning the stocks.
Yes, that's true.
I'm not saying it would fix it.
And then the other thing there is like most people probably don't have enough disposable income too.
But now they might. Now they might buy $5 worth of Berkshire Hathaway, right? That's what I'm saying. That's the difference.
We shall see. We shall see.
I'm not trying to pitch this as, you know, this isn't Bitcoin. It's not fixing it, but
no, Bitcoin fixes. It's more financial inclusion, which is good. Yes, I agree. This is better for, I mean, that's the other hand. Yeah. Like, should people be individual stock pickers? That's another question you get down.
Right? That was the other thing I was thinking. Is it like ethical to offer them stocks? Like, but who's to decide? Like, exactly. Why should you be able to decide? That's just like paternalistic thinking.
Exactly. I agree. A lot of questions. I'm sure they thought this through at the Cash App before launching, but I think I'll stop buying stocks on Robinhood and start using Cash App just for consolidation purposes. There's my millennial plug there. I use Robinhood.
Do you ever buy Dogecoin on Robinhood?
Fuck no. God no. Before we get to... We haven't even got to a topic yet. We're 15 minutes in. But before we get to the topics, got to give a shout out to the person who bought a shout out. This is a good one. Starting November 1st, we're calling this Fast for Satoshi. You're going to improve your health and stack sats at the same time. On the 1st of November, you're going to skip your breakfast, your lunch, your dinner, your coffee, or your midday snack, and use those funds to market buy Bitcoin. It's November 1st. Remember, your future self and 6.15 bitches will thank you. Use the hashtag fast for Satoshi to increase awareness.
Fast for Satoshi?
Fast for Satoshi.
What's the date?
November 1st.
November 1st.
So we're about a week away.
I fucking love this idea. This is a great idea.
So we're gonna skip a couple meals. If you're working in a big city, you have to commute to work every day, and you go to the halal cart and you get like a $5 halal meal, skip that meal one day, you know, and buy Bitcoin. And this, I spoke with the gentleman who purchased this shout out over DMs, and he said he got his inspiration from reading old libertarian textbooks, and apparently like the agorist and the libertarians and the hardcore anarchists would take 2 days a month, I believe, and fast and use the money they would have spent on food or things they would have done that day to pull together for those less fortunate. It's a pretty cool idea. People like to talk about who's going to build the roads, who's going to take care of the poor. Apparently there are examples of history of libertarian freer societies that would fast a couple days a month, pool the money, and give it to those less fortunate, which I think is a pretty cool idea. And we're going to do this by stacking sats.
I like this idea better.
It's a good one.
Let's stack some sats. November 1st.
Yeah, November 1st.
Fast for Satoshi.
Fast for Satoshi. We'll put the hashtag in the tweet when we send this out. Big list this week. Big list. We're going to start with something we missed last week. Had it on the list. We breezed over it for some reason. I forget why, but Layer 1. Alex Legal, who's been on this podcast before last year, is being backed by Peter Thiel and a bunch of other investors. I believe they got $200 million worth of funding
They got $50
million. $50
million. And a $200 million valuation.
That's what it is. $50 million of funding, $200 million valuation to build out a Bitcoin mining operation in West Texas. Alex launched a Medium post with the announcement, basically saying that Texas is going to be the capital of Bitcoin mining and trying to basically bring more distribution to the mining space and more mining to America, which I think is imperative. So very excited to see what they build out. Very interested to see what happens, considering a lot of it is solar and wind. Very much looking forward to that. What are your thoughts?
I thought it was interesting that the angle they pitched it as, one of the main angles they pitched it as was from like a patriotic national defense kind of angle, which we've theorized a lot about here at the pod. Is that it's going to be both in your financial best interests and your national security interests to have a thriving Bitcoin mining sector in your country, just to hedge out other world powers, and also just to fully, you know, take advantage of your energy, because it's such an easy way to monetize energy. The other thing I thought was interesting was the $200 million valuation seems like really, really fucking high. But the way they justify it is two things. Well, first, they justify it based off what we just earlier said is, you know, there should be, if you're like a rich American, if you're Peter Thiel, like you should want U.S. mining to be stronger. And there's already a lot of big U.S. mining ops here, too. But it's always good to see more. But the other big thing is that they supposedly made all the chips in-house. They have their own ASICs that they're not selling to the general public. And they have, one of the issues with mining in Texas is that it's hot. So you need to cool all your chips, and that's an additional cost. That's why you see a lot of mining happening in places like Iceland and stuff, like where you have cheap excess energy coupled with the fact that you have basically free cooling because it's cold outside. So they supposedly have some proprietary cooling method, right? So we don't really know either of those things, how legit that is. So that's what it's going to come down to, probably.
Yeah. We shall see how good the product is when it hits the market. But again, going back to just the overall point of the necessity for Bitcoin mining operations in America, I am a true wholehearted believer in this idea. Bitcoin, whether you like it or not, is inherently geopolitical. It is geopolitical because it's apolitical. Anybody can access it. Anybody can have a Bitcoin strategy. People do have Bitcoin strategies, which we'll talk a little bit more in a little bit here. And people will have Bitcoin strategies moving into the future. Like, it's just inevitable. Like, it's already happening. So it would be wise for America to join this race, this arms race in mining. And we do think we have an incredible opportunity considering all the excess energy we have in oil and natural gas fields in particular, across America in the Permian and the Bracken Basin. Like, there is so much untapped energy. There was an article in the New York Times that came out last week. I read about it in the Bent. Actually, while I was citing one of Alex Legal's tweet threads on why they're getting into it.
And they're using wind and solar, right?
Yes, they're using wind and solar. But so just to give you freaks an idea of in America, like how much more efficient we can be with the energy that we're consuming. Again, an article in the New York Times came out a couple of weeks ago and said the data also shows that BP this year acquired some of the most polluting sites in the Permian and then followed flaring and venting to increase. So flaring is when you cap and you burn the energy. You don't really use it for anything. You just burn it instead of venting it. Venting it is a lot worse for the environment. So ideally, we would be flaring as much natural gas as possible. But right now, BP flared off only 17%, so 83%.
And it was just because they were required to by law.
Yes, they're right? required to by law.
To flare a certain amount.
Yes, and they made a commitment, or excuse me, Exxon's made a commitment to get to 25% like flaring levels by 2020 or something.
But Bitcoin mining lets them get to 100% and make money doing it.
Yeah, so
a profit motive.
Again, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast, but to distill it, really, the problem is that you have this energy stranded in very odd areas, very far off places, far from cities in particular, and they literally can't build the pipe. That's why you hear all this shit about pipes and pipelines and stuff like that. They can't build the pipes to transfer all the energy they're taking out of the ground to the cities and places that have demand for energy in particular. So you have a problem where there's no demand for that energy in the local area. So Bitcoin creates that demand. You show up where it is. So you cut the need for hundreds of miles of pipelines down to feet of a very small pipeline that just goes from the site to a generator that's consuming the energy, and then that's powering Bitcoin miners. So this is something where you have a lot of efficiencies that could be gained. Obviously, here in America in particular, like, we should be all over this. And I do think, like, you want to talk about a Green New Deal, we should have an initiative where we're going around to all these oil fields and retrofitting them with Bitcoin miners.
Bitcoin is the Green New Deal.
Bitcoin is the Green New Deal.
And the same is true with renewables. Like, a lot of times you see, like in this case, Layer 1 is using solar, and they're basically putting it in the desert, right? So no one lives out there. So you don't have to transport it. All you need is an internet connection, and you're able to mine. That's pretty crazy. And they also want to do financial services, but I don't know.
Like a full stack.
They'll do the full stack.
Well, and I think this is also an important thing to bring up. Alex's thread that I cited in the Bent earlier this week, he ran with the Bitcoin as a huge battery and like energy storage system meme, which is popular out there. And
I like that meme.
I like it too, but I've fallen victim to it. But at the end of the day, it is a little bit, I don't want to say disingenuous, it is a little bit wrong, right? Because like, you can't store energy in Bitcoin.
I mean, you're storing it as money, which is almost better. It's more liquid.
Yeah.
I mean, what, like, battery storage right now?
You're just trading energy, consumed energy for Bitcoin.
Isn't battery storage, it's like 40% efficiency or something like that? It's like fucking horrendous. Like, when you store in a battery. So like, if you can store it as money instead and you don't get that loss of efficiency, right? It's so much better.
Well, that's, you're not making that battery more efficient. You're just allocating that capital into another good. That's right.
Did you see Joe's response, Joe Weisenthal's response?
No.
He, in his morning post today, Bitcoin is like alcohol.
I did not see
digital alcohol. That's what it was. Bitcoin is not digital gold. It's digital alcohol.
Why is it digital alcohol?
Because like with alcohol, you take grapes, right? You take all these grapes, like these 2,000 grapes or whatever, and they could spoil really easily, and they're hard to transport, and they're hard to store. But then if you convert them into wine, then they're easy to store, like easy to transport and barter and stuff, and they age, and they age well instead of going bad.
So it was a positive comment from Joe.
Yeah. Bitcoin is digital alcohol.
I like that, Joe. You know we like alcohol in this podcast. Hey, any of you whiskey companies listening, reach out. Reach out. We're looking for a whiskey sponsor.
I'm surprised we didn't get a whiskey sponsor
yet. And I'm not going to play favorites right now. No free ads. We'll let you guys approach us.
I'm biting my tongue.
Don't play. Yeah. Keep your. We need to create a bidding war here. All right.
That's fair.
Ethical revenue via whiskey company bidding wars. But yeah, Bitcoin mining is coming to America. I believe we don't have this on the list, but I believe Bitmain. There's rumors. I mean, there's headlines that they bought the biggest mining operation in America in Texas as well, but I'm skeptical of that claim.
We have a lot around like Hydro. There's a lot in upstate New York, Washington State. Wherever there's dams, there's always excess really cheap energy.
Yes, and I can tell you from experience that these energy companies are starting to wake up to this fact as well, that they're leaving some money on the table. And there's ways to create different revenue streams on their operations.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just such a clear revenue model here that people are going to jump on it really quickly. We have more good news. Bakkt just hit its all-time high volume yesterday.
Yeah, this was we were actually spitballing about this before we hit record. I was talking about this with some other friends yesterday, and somebody's like, is Bakkt anywhere? Like, what's the volume like? I'm like, it can't be. It's not that good. And I checked, and this was yesterday morning, probably like 11 a.m. It was at 333 Bitcoin by then. And yeah, like you just alluded to, they announced earlier this morning that yesterday was an all-time high for them. They hit 640 Bitcoin, or one contract's worth one Bitcoin. So 640 Bitcoin worth of volume on that product.
Yeah, and just for comparison, the day before they had 85.
Yeah, so what's going on?
Like it wasn't even... It just like skyrocketed.
Yeah, and so like in comparison, CME, when I checked it at the same time that Bakkt was at 333 Bitcoin, and CME at that point was at like 1048 Bitcoin. So it was like one third of the volume. So like it seems like it's approaching parity. And is this like a more popular product?
So it launched. When did it launch? A month ago or
September 1st, maybe, right?
Yeah, so like almost 2 months ago, and it had a slow start. It was a different product. People had to get used to it. But I mean, yesterday was the big sell-off, right? So whenever you see volatility, traders come into the market in general. I don't know. It's just something to keep an eye on. It's interesting. Today, supposedly, it's trending to break all-time high again. So 2 days back-to-back, major volume.
Is the CME suffering as a result, or?
I don't know. I don't really follow this.
I got to check into that. Yesterday was the first time I checked volumes on both exchanges for the first time in a while.
So like the difference, so the CME is cash settled, and then the Bakkt, like you can actually take delivery of the Bitcoin. You can receive actual Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. So it would be more more appeasing to me, at least. It's great. Is it good, though? Because this is actually segues.
We should talk about that now.
Segues into what I alluded to earlier, talking about administrations and countries having a Bitcoin plan. It seems that the Trump administration has a Bitcoin plan. I wrote about this yesterday in the Ben. I was truly, honestly, like taken aback when this article was shared with me. And literally the first quote in the article from CoinDesk, let's see who wrote this from CoinDesk. Brady Dale. Yeah, so Brady Dale wrote an article yesterday. Was it 2 days ago? It's 2 days ago at this point. basically documenting the ex-CFTC chairman, Christopher Giancarlo, who was speaking at some conference, basically admit that the Trump administration has a Bitcoin plan or was watching Bitcoin and acted to affect the price of Bitcoin, at least. So here's a quote. "One of the old untold stories of the past years is that the CFTC, the Treasury, the SEC, and the National Economic Council director at the time, Gary Cohen, believed that the launch of Bitcoin futures would have the impact of popping the Bitcoin bubble. And it worked." So it seems like just like an offhand comment, but it's a comment coming from somebody who was the chairman of one of the most important regulators in the country, working closely with the Trump administration, the Treasury, the SEC, and other entities within our government, basically saying that, yeah, we were looking at Bitcoin. We were worried about the price. We deemed it something we could not control. And basically the intentions of allowing the future markets to develop were to pop the bubble and to basically make the price go down, which is pretty crazy.
So, I mean, before we unpack it, what I would say is, you know, we've had Bitcoin bubbles in the past. If they want to take credit for the CME helping to pop it when it popped, they also should be ready to take credit for the bubble being as big as it was. I think without the Trump administration, without the CME adding futures to Bitcoin, like, we never would have seen the all-time high we saw. It was like 19 whatever. Because it was all up into the lead up of CME launching in the first place, right? It was like crazy. It was like there was the most crazy legitimate, like, they made Bitcoin legitimate that day, right? When they added CME, when they announced that it was going to happen, and CBOE.
Yeah, and I want to be clear here. Like, if Bitcoin, and I wrote about this in the Ben, if you haven't read it though, like, if Bitcoin is to be what we think it is, and we do think quote unquote institutions are coming, but that's something we have been warning you freaks for quite some time to not hold your breath about. But if that is going to happen, the development of this future market is pretty predictable. So, again, like, just letting the market have better price discovery tools is to be expected. What I really startled me again was the like candor and the admission of the intention of
the intent, whether or yes. not it was effective or not. Because we've had bubbles in the past.
Yeah, we'll never be able to prove if that did pop the bubble.
Well, we've had bubbles in the past. Like, Bitcoin just goes through bubbles and they pop, you know, severely. This time it was exacerbated, I think, because of CME, but the intent is pretty notable. The other thing is, like, a lot of people, so this has brought up more talk about, like, rehypothecation and, like, suppressing the Bitcoin price through futures markets, cash-settled futures specifically, like CME. You know, I don't really prescribe to that, I don't think. I think the beauty of Bitcoin is that if we all just keep stacking sats and withdrawing that and securing them ourselves and taking custody ourselves, then there's only so many Bitcoin. Like how would they be able to suppress the price that way? Like, if we just kept self-custody, just keep adding to our stack, and just, we would just run up the price. The price would just have to go up.
Well, that's the knock on these derivative products, is you can fuck with the price without holding the underlying.
But how can you if people are just buying and taking it off exchange?
Because it's leveraged trading. You don't need as much to have as you don't need as much to have, like, a crazy influence on the markets.
But long term, you won't be able to suppress
the
price.
No, obviously. And this is actually probably a good segue into a product that launched today. I wrote about it in today's Bent. Our friends at Iterative Capital, we've had Chris Dannon on the podcast. Go check out that episode if you haven't yet. That was over a year ago. I think we're going to get together soon again. But Iterative announced the launch of a new product that they're spinning out called Escher Hub. And it's basically very similar to Olympus. It's a non-custodial exchange. You're going to have to do KYC and all that good stuff, but they're really honing in on trying to cut down the settlement time between U.S. dollar bank accounts and Bitcoin exchange accounts, the fees, and then they really want to get rid of buy limits. So you're going to, if you do the proper KYC, you're going to be able to buy $2 million worth of Bitcoin at once. Pretty easily.
It's non-custodial.
Yes, and it's non-custodial, so you can connect it with any wallet you want, and you'll basically buy Bitcoin via Escher Hub, and they'll send it right to an address of your
Or Lightning choice. For smaller amounts.
Yeah, or Lightning as well. So this is what I said in the Ben today. Like, I love seeing this UX flow of exchanges sort of become more popular and the go-to for new exchanges that are coming up, because this is the way it should be. And going back to our futures futures markets discussion, like, if this UX flow does become popular and people are comfortable with interacting with the exchange where they buy and get it sent right to a personal wallet, you're really taking away ammunition from those short sellers, because they usually get liquidity from big books, big exchanges, and stuff like that.
Yeah, they would not be able to suppress the price. It could just keep going up.
It could.
I mean, it would have bubbles, just like it's always had, right? But I think the volatility with adoption should edge itself out a little bit.
Yeah, but regardless of the futures contracts, like, this UX flow, like, of sending straight to a wallet.
Non-custodial. Is key.
And
I thought it was interesting, because I was... after this announcement, which was I thought was great, I thought you can see on the live stream, you can see Chris's actual presentation in Berlin for the Lightning Conference. It was a great presentation. I went back because of the 10-year anniversary. We did our first live show ever. And Chris and the guys at Iterative Capital hosted us.
Yes. Can't forget about that.
And the last question, and one of our listeners gave us a bottle of really nice Japanese whiskey. It was like the bottom of the market. So like Seven Drink Matt came out, like I was pretty drunk or whatever. At the very end, Chris asks us a question in the Q&A period. And the question was twofold. The first part of the question was he was basically telling us that we had to wrap it up and get off. But the second part was he asked if we thought Lightning would be used like by exchanges to deliver Bitcoin to their customers. And I like drunkenly said it was like too risky, we're never gonna see it, it's never gonna happen, it requires hot wallets and like locking up liquidity, and the routing fees aren't gonna make them like any money, and it just creates all this additional liability. And now here we are, that was in January, so here we are 10 months later, and Chris and the guys over there are launching exactly that product that I said was never possible. So I just think,
you're going to eat, like, crow? Are you eating crow right now?
I'm admitting to it, you know? I think Bitcoin...
It's big of you.
It comes at you fast, you know? And in 10 months becomes a really long time, which it's in... I think in, like, the normal world, it's 10 months only. Yeah. But I was like a lightning bear in January.
No, we're... I'm all for better and more on-ramps, right? The more competition, the better.
Our noddle just hit 7 months, just to put it all into reference, right? So
we're gonna have to tip the thief. Yeah, the thief, if you're listening, send us an invoice via DMs. We'll tip you.
It's a big it's been a big year. And I this is like, it reminds me, this is like the Get Bitter model, right?
Yes.
And Bitter also announced over the weekend that they are doing Lightning as well. So Bitter, we've had Ruben on the podcast. They, you know, whenever you send a bank transfer, it just sends to your wallet address, and now he's going to add Lightning. And I think it's a partnership with Noddle. You need a Noddle at first to use it.
Boss, innovation everywhere, man. And that's I don't want to ruin the episode with Evan and talk about it before it airs. But that quote I tweeted about today. Just stop worrying about handing out red pills and worry about strengthening Zion's defenses. That has stuck with me the whole week.
Thinking about such that. A good quote. You just fucking dropped it too.
Yeah, out of nowhere. I was like, where's that from? He's like, I made it up. I was like, whoa, boss, dude. But
that comes out next week.
These are great examples. Like Bitter, like these, what Bitter's doing, what the Escher Hub team's doing, Olympus coming out, like all these.
Spark Swap.
On top of that, yeah. I'm seeing
Bull Bitcoin. They're not doing Lightning yet, but they do a similar non-custodial model.
Not like even like beyond exchanges. Like I don't know if we have this on the list, but I wrote about it today in the Bent too. A lot of Bent references. There's review groups being developed for Taproot review. So if you're a developer listening right now and you want to help review the Taproot code and give critiques and contribute to the open source project and make sure there's no bugs. I believe Andrew Towns is hosting a review club or starting a review club on November 1st. So we will link to that GitHub page. But again, it feels like while we were talking about it with Evan, we were like a little worried, like, are people just trying to red pill? But then red pill too much, or then you see stuff like this come out, and it makes me very, very bullish. The fundamentals to me are ripping and roaring right now.
Fuck yes.
Speaking of fundamentals, Tails 4.0 was released.
Yeah, so this is a big one. It brings it up to Debian 10. But the really big thing for me is it brings Electrum support back because it was broken for a little bit. So now Electrum's fully up to date. And that's really important. So Tails is a live distro of Linux. So you put it on a USB drive. You stick it in, and it's done by the Tor Foundation. You stick it into your computer, you boot from it, and it boots you into Linux. And everything automatically goes through Tor. So if you're using Tor, it's like probably the most secure way for the average user to use Tor. And then as soon as you pull the USB drive out, it forgets everything. Everything that you were doing on your computer theoretically should be wiped at that point. And what's been awesome about it for the longest time is that it has Electrum support. So you can generate a cold wallet in there or use it with your hardware wallet in like a secure environment without downloading any additional software. It's just all built into Tails. So now that brings that back. You can do like multi-sig, all these different stuff through Electrum on there. The usual disclosures, if you're using Electrum, you should connect it to your own server, either like Electris or Electrumx. But yeah, that's awesome. And then the other thing they added was they added KeePass. They built in KeePass, which is an open source password manager. So that's fucking dope. So that's a very good, that could be a good option for accessing like important passwords and stuff like that.
That's how our boy John Doe secured his Bitcoin through his forced HODL. It was on Tails.
Yeah, supposedly.
Yeah, that's the...
Tails is great. I fucking love Tails. It's just, yeah, it was like my go-to cold storage method for a while. It's just a very easy process.
Speaking of cold storage, Crypto Steel, the capsule.
This thing's fucking dope.
It's dope. It's very phallic as well.
Nature's pocket.
Right? So Crypto Steel, the creators of Crypto Steel, which is a basically a physical seed phrase holder. What's that?
It's like instead of writing your seed on paper,
you put it in metal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they had these plates before where you would put letters in.
Yeah, impervious to fire, impervious to water damage and corrosion and stuff like that. And now they've come out with another metal. I don't want to say hardware. They come out with another.
It's like their new product. Yeah. I think it's like replacing the other one.
Basically a paper wallet, but in with metal. And yeah, it's cool. It's like a little pipe. It looks like a pipe, and you have little disc with letters on them. And it seems like it would be a long process getting your seed phrase in there, but
they're seeds. They're worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and if you mix it with like a Shamir's or a multi-sig setup or whatever, you get like five of them. You put them different places. They're smaller than the last device, but they hold more letters. I don't know. I think it's just a really solid product. I already ordered one. I almost ordered five because I think it should be fucking... They could be very useful. But I was like, no, let me test out one first. I was good about that. I was proud of myself. But I think it's a pretty... It seems like a well-thought-out product.
Yeah.
And it was very outside the box. There's a lot of the plate ones now that are on the market from all these different... And also you can stamp. A lot of people take titanium and just stamp it themselves with like a hammer and a stamper. But the Crypto Steel product was always a solid product. This takes it a step further, I think. Oh, and also once you screw it in, it's tamper resistant. So you know if someone opened it, which is if you're using a Shamir's or multi-sig setup, if someone gets one of them, you're still should be good. But at least you know that they've seen it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think it's nature's pocket friendly too.
Yeah, you're such a child. That was like the first thing you thought of. But yes, it does appear that way. I wonder if it was an intentional design.
You got to keep your inner child alive, freaks. It's Uncle Marty lesson right there. Keep it alive. What would your 18-year-old self think of you? What would he think? Or she? Yeah, we alluded to it. Alluded. I keep saying alluded to. We talked about the Lightning Network conference over the weekend. Probably, I know you're very jacked up about these reveals, but probably the biggest reveals of the weekend were the games that came out. So ZBD,
super jacked up.
ZBD, we talked about them last week, and I did have the name of the company correct. So ZBD.io, which is spun out of Light, Koala Studios, that team, Andre Neves and Mandelduck, and then the team at Satoshi Games came out with a game as well. So ZBD dropped Raikai, which is like a Tekken-like game where you can win sats, and they even iterated on the game over the weekend. If you're watching some of the streams, they added the ability for spectators to purchase like life for their player of choice, and it was pretty cool to see that live. It worked.
They have a second game too. They announced Asgard as well.
Asgard, and Satoshi's game came out with Light Knight, which seems pretty fucking crazy.
Looks fucking badass.
So it's like Fortnite, but for Bitcoin nerds.
Yeah, it's Battle Royale, but for sats.
Yeah.
In both of these games, sats are the standard. That's what the unit is. That's what they use in the thing.
You're
neither
hot on
are pay
this.
To win. Neither are pay to win, like exactly as it should be. But when you do win, you get paid, and that's fucking dope. When you kill someone, you take their sats.
You're under the impression that gaming's going to be huge for this.
I'm super fucking pumped.
What in particular about gaming? Like, do you think? Can you see yourself? Like, should we set up a Twitch stream? Should we be getting a Twitch stream and playing Light
for
Night?
For Light Night, we're definitely doing Twitch stream for Light Night.
Okay.
Oh, and they're accepting, they need help with the funding, so they're accepting pre-orders for it. So consider pre-ordering it as a half donation, half pre-order. I think, look, we have global gaming is fucking booming. It's the fastest growing area of media. And we have kids, people of all ages playing it all around the world. Lots of people playing it competitively. But each ecosystem is a closed ecosystem. So if people could anonymously play these games and win money, from other people, it's like mixing gambling with gaming, right?
How do we not have like big gamers in the Bitcoin yet? Like, this should be no brainer for them. Get all your money, gamers. Hey, if you're out there, you're gaming, you're playing for one of these big companies, just go anon. Like, you can work from anywhere, right? You don't need these companies. You can get sats directly.
You know, maybe they just have good OPSEC. Maybe like top 10 Fortnite player is listening to the podcast right now while he's playing Fortnite, because I think they just have to play it all day, right?
Yeah. I haven't gamed in a minute. Maybe this will be the thing that gets me back into gaming.
I'm super excited for what both teams have in store for us. Light Knight is like really like that really tickles my fancy. The whole battle royale, drop 100 people, last man standing gets all the sats. That kind of thing would be dope.
Yeah. Is there like payout second, third through fifth, or winner takes all?
It seems like they also have the model where if you're killing someone, you take their sats too. So I'm not sure exactly how that will work out. But one of the cool things about Fortnite is that they do have all these different game styles. So they could even offer you like different lobbies. All I know is like when it comes out, like me and the freaks, we're going to be playing a lot of Light Night together.
What was your gaming upbringing like? What were the games in your life?
I didn't play till I was like older.
I was complete opposite. I played a shit ton when I was a kid. I stopped like when I got to college.
I think I didn't get a console until I was like 14 or something.
I got one when I got a Nintendo.
I would like play at friends' houses, you know.
Yeah, we had an N64, then a PlayStation, then an Xbox.
Yeah, N64 was my first.
Yeah.
And then just all the Xboxes.
Freaks know I'm a Star Fox fan. Rip Star Fox. Ocarina of Time, I think, is the best game ever created. I was a big Halo guy for a minute there in high school. Big Halo guy. I was a no sniper at one time in my life. No scope sniper, excuse me.
I'm just sitting here just bullish as fuck about gaming and Bitcoin.
Again, the fundamentals, dude.
And it works well with Lightning, too. You can just withdraw really quickly, you can go to other services, other games. It's just fucking dope.
Yeah, all the live demos from the conference. Shout out to the Lightning Conference, and people threw that together in Berlin. It was very integrated with Lightning payments, obviously. So you saw people buying coffee with Bitcoin, sponsored by BitMEX. The, I believe it was called Room 77 or Bar 77.
Room 77, Room which 77. Is a bar.
Yeah, it's a bar in Berlin that's like Bitcoin only. People were able to buy beers with via the Lightning Network and stuff like that. I did hear some people had bad UX experiences, but overall, I think it was pretty successful and a great advertisement for the Lightning Network overall. Again, we were talking about it last week. We've seen a lot of activity on our site alone. The Dimebag is the most popular page on our website. Go check out our website if you haven't. Let us know what you think. We got a bunch of updates, so I'm just going to wrap them off because we're a little short on time here too. So we got, if you are running Zap, they got updates for iOS and desktop. If you're running BISC, they've updated to version 1.2. Make sure you complete all trades and disputes and offers before upgrading. Make sure everything's finished before you upgrade. Zeus, they've updated to version 0.1.1. And then Async, we'll talk about later. But yeah, so BISC, Zeus, Zap, Zeus and Zap. Two apps that let you integrate and interact with your Node and Lightning wallet, and then BISC, the P2P exchange where you can buy Bitcoin person to person, no KYC, no AML. Again, if you're going to update BISC, if you're a BISC user, make sure you complete all trades and disputes that you have open and offers before you upgrade.
And Evan, who's the creator of Zeus, we recorded a conversation with him that gets released next week.
Yeah.
The other thing is, the guys at Noddle announced that the Noddle Dojo, the upcoming Samurai version, is going to have a built-in kill switch, which I thought was pretty badass. So basically, the drives on this new Noddle are going to be encrypted. So if someone tries to get physical access to the device while it's on and tries to open the case, it will shut off the device and clear the encryption key. So they need the password to enter the password. So I thought that was a pretty dope addition to the box. And I've known about this for like a week and a half, and I wasn't allowed to tell anybody, so I'm excited to tell you freaks about it.
From the man who brought you a kill switch comes the announcement of a kill switch. It's or dead man switch.
Exactly.
Not kill switch. No, yeah, it's dope. And is Michael and team always thinking of crazy attack vectors. Wouldn't have never thought my node needs a kill switch, a physical kill switch.
Yeah, he's paranoid in a good way, and I fucking dig it.
Yeah. The other announcement that came out of the Lightning Network conference over the weekend, Async, they announced their new mobile Lightning wallet, Phoenix, and their intention of doing this is to help with better UX. We'll have a link to the demo that they shared when they announced it in the notes, but yeah, it seems pretty cool. Non-custodial. You're connecting to your node, from what I understand. And
Well, it runs a node on your phone.
Yeah.
And it's a light node, so it connects back to their servers. So it's, you know, not... You can also connect it to your own node, but if you use it in light mode, it's not, like, that ideal for privacy. But they're doing something with incoming liquidity. They're giving you incoming liquidity somehow.
Yeah, so...
Is it similar to Breeze? I think it's a little bit different.
So it's simple, streamlined onboarding, no channel management, unified balance, transparent on-chain, off-chain payments, simple seed-based backup and restore. It's still non-custodial. And in 3 minutes, they're able to set up a wallet, receive money, make an on-chain and off-chain payment, and do full backup restore. Again, in less than 3 minutes.
I think I remember what they do. They charge you for the incoming liquidity.
Yes, that is.
A fee pops up when you go to receive a payment, and it gives you, right?
Yes.
They charge the receiver, the person running it.
Yes. So again, these apps are getting built like crazy. If you are an Async user, go check that out. Phoenix is the name of the app. We'll have a link to it. And then another thing that we talked about this week in the TFTC realm, my conversation with Justin Moon, we touched on Fully Noted. So the Fully Noted iOS app allows you to connect to your own full node through Tor, and you can use it with a cold card with PSTB. excuse me, I always screw this up. PS,
you fucked it up with Justin too.
PSBT, and this is a YouTube tutorial, fully noted. They have iOS and Android apps.
It's just iOS.
Just iOS.
Yeah. The guy who's behind it tweeted out. He's like, I'm just making this app to give Matt Odell iOS envy. But it looks fucking dope as fuck. So you can use your cold card with your full node using this app, and it's fully open source.
Yeah, I watched the demo before, right before you got here. Very, very good demo, too. Very concise, to the point. And then today as well, if you are checking out the Dig channel, I put this on there. Samurai released a new Anon Set tool in a Medium post to go along with it. It's called Diving Headfirst into Whirlpool Anonymity Sets. And they basically walk you through their process of pre-mix, during mix, and post-mix UX practices and best practices that users should use, and how users have messed up to this point. And then on top of that, Whirlpool liquidity has been increasing too. That's something we've been talking about here and paying attention to. So apparently liquidity in the Whirlpool mixers has been increasing, which is good. And staying on the topic of coin joins, we should probably talk about that Ergo BTC deep dive into the idiots from, was it Push Token?
Plus Token. Yeah, so the Samurai Wallet released an onset tool is really interesting. The Medium post is also very interesting, how they explain how they're calculating it. So they give you a command line tool so you can calculate it yourself. Basically, the idea is that the way they have it set up with the transaction zero, so in the beginning you pay the fee and you become a transaction zero and they're all the same exact amount. And from that point forward, you don't pay a fee again. Creates this a connection between all the transactions that have been in the past and have been in the future, and amplifies the anonymity set, especially if you remix. So because every coin join is a 5-person coin join, and at least three are new people and two are remixes. So because of that, there's like this lineage that happens that makes the Anon set larger. You should read the post. The post is very good.
The post is very good.
The freak should read the post.
Yeah.
And then with the Plus Token, so these guys...
We were alluding to these guys. I didn't know it was the Plus Token guys. I just thought it was some random trader, but we alluded to this last week, I believe, right?
Or 2 weeks ago. Ergo's been following the trail for a little bit.
Yeah.
So Plus Token was a Ponzi-esque scam, or just a straight Ponzi scam, in China or somewhere in Asia. And these guys got caught, or some of them got caught, and they're trying to move this money, and some of it through Wasabi, some through other means. And they made plenty of mistakes along the way. So Ergo, tracked them a bunch, documented the whole thing, and it's just a very good read. Everyone should go and read it.
Yeah.
Can't really do it justice.
I actually think I'm going to write about it in the Ben tomorrow, because it is a very good lesson on how to perform good UX, or not even good UX, how to perform coin joins and maintain your privacy. Again, it's not easy, freaks. It's not easy at all right now at this point. Hopefully it gets easier over time, and the tools are being built to make it easier.
They made a bunch of mistakes. A lot of like recombining after mixes and stuff like that. They were self shuffling with themselves, which you could just see that they were. You could just see that they were self shuffling. So it's a good cautionary tale, and it's just a good way to see like where Bitcoin privacy currently is. So it's definitely a good read. Everyone should read both those Medium posts.
Read those Medium posts, and then if you're able to, go help review BipTaproot. This is pretty big. It's a pretty big fuck up on NordVPN's part. If some of you freaks don't know already, this has been out, I believe it dropped like last Friday. NordVPN, their private keys leaked. Like they forgot to get them re-authenticated or something, right? And they've just been sitting there for quite a while.
Yeah, I'm not positive, but it's really fucked up.
Yeah, so NordVPN.
Basically, anyone could create a NordVPN server with these keys and just start bringing in traffic from users.
It could be a government or a nefarious actor. Just not what you want to see from your VPN provider. Again, trusted third parties, even when you're trying to get away from them. The ones that you go into can fuck you over.
Yeah, so talking about VPNs. So VPNs allow you to send your traffic through another server that's encrypted to the server, and then once it hits the server, it goes out to the wider web from that server. So it does two things. It means that who's ever providing you internet, whether that's a public Wi-Fi spot at the coffee shop or whether that's your home internet provider, who's ever providing you internet can't see your internet traffic. And it also means that the internet traffic you're doing, the websites you're hitting, the services you're hitting, think you're located wherever the server is located that you're going through. So there's two different types of VPNs. There's VPNs that you run yourself, and there's VPNs that are shared VPNs, like these VPN services that have become very popular. Running a VPN yourself is obviously the ideal in a lot of situations. So when you run when you use a VPN provider, what you're doing is instead of your ISP, instead of your internet service provider seeing all your internet surfing, your VPN provider sees all of it. And it's encrypted by these encryption keys that NordVPN lost, right? If you use your own VPN, then you set it up properly, that's one of the hard parts, is it's hard to set up properly, and you set it up properly, then you don't have that issue. But what you're doing is you're probably running it on a virtual private server, someone's server in a server farm, and you don't have physical access to it. So there's some questions there, but like if you set it up properly, you should be good. Now the issue though is shared VPNs are dope because when you do that, when you run your own VPN, your IP address is fixed. Like it's just one server, you have one server, unless you're buying multiple servers in different places. Your IP address is fixed and you're the only one using it. So if people see you hitting from that IP, like that's still just your IP. But if you use one of these shared VPN services, you share that IP with a bunch of other people. So there's like thousands of people on the internet going around and they all look like they're coming from the same computer. So you hide in the crowd. And especially if you pay with Bitcoin and you don't tie it to your actual name, that provides a nice degree of privacy. It gives you a huge privacy bonus. So I guess like the ideal would be to run your own VPN and then use that to connect into another VPN that's a shared VPN and then go from there. But I don't know. I mean, you're still actually, that doesn't even help really, because even if you nestle it that way, you're still showing traffic to the shared VPN. But I think you use a good solid shared VPN that's not like one of the reasons NordVPN was so popular was because it was one of the cheapest, right? Like that's usually a telltale sign. Never use a free VPN. So like you get like a good VPN, you pay for it with Bitcoin. It's a shared VPN. And so your IP address is hiding in the crowd. And for all your important shit, you use Tor for. Like I think that's like gotta be the game plan. And I personally like Mulvad. I think Mulvad.net is really fucking good.
You've turned me on to Mulvad, and I like it as well.
Yeah. And it's like nice. You get to pick your server, and like each server is like you have like all these different people. And like, so then it's like kind of a controversial topic. I don't know if you've seen like on the Twitter since Nord happened too. Like it came back up to the surface between the people that say run your own. Because VPNs could very easily be honeypots, right? Where they're just designed, like I think private internet access is like a honeypot. It's located in America. I think they're just trying to filter as much traffic as possible. But at the same time, like there's so much more competition in the VPN world. Like it's way easier to start a VPN and you can service the whole world with it than ISPs. Like we know all of our ISPs are spying on us. So it's still a step improvement, I think.
Yeah. Now, one of those tricky situations with trade-offs, right? You just have to be aware, try and stay on top of what your VPN provider is doing. Sorry for you freaks out there using NordVPN. Their negligence may have harmed you. Maybe it didn't, but yeah, it's pretty fucked. Pretty big fuck up by NordVPN. And again, We just said that we use Molvad, but that's not to say that they can't have a similar fuck-up like this in the future either.
Yeah, I mean, Molvad could spy on you if they wanted to. They could be taking logs and stuff. They say they're not.
Yeah.
You should assume they are. But you still, even if they are doing that, you get the benefit of your ISP doesn't know. And the sites you visit don't know your IP address. They just see this shared Molvad IP address, right? Yeah. So it's still, and then for the important stuff, you use Tor. Yeah, I think it was a wake-up call for a lot of people, which is good, though.
Yeah, it was pretty, I was not expecting to see that headline last week.
Yeah, and it's been out there, supposedly.
It's been out there for like a couple years, right?
It's been leaked for a while, right?
Yeah. That's pretty fucked. Last topic here, I just want to touch on this. Mario Draghi, who has been the chairman of the European Central Bank for the last 8 years, is finally walking away from the position. And during his 8-year tenure, he did not raise interest rates once. And he's handing off the baton to Christine Lagarde, who's coming to the ECB from the IMF, another part of the banking, the global banking vampire squid, if you will. So it'll be interesting to see the Fed, too. We'll just end it on central bank talk. The Fed had to purchase, I believe, $142 billion worth of the repo markets overnight from yesterday to today had $142 billion of operations going on. So that's usually not a good sign. Remember when they first started these operations and they were supposed to last for 5 days, I believe they were buying $70 billion a day.
And they haven't stopped, right?
They haven't stopped. No, they're still going. And it's only getting...
Some people are saying like it's phantom QE4.
Well, yeah.
Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I would agree with it's QE without calling it QE. It has the same effect. Just go look at the monetary base chart that we like to bring up in the Baruch College class every semester. If you go check that, since these operations have started, the monetary base has been increasing again. So, yes, it is basically doing the same thing that QE did when QE happened. So, yeah, it's QE without calling it QE.
Sats are my safe haven.
Find safety in sats, baby. That's all we got this week. If you're liking it, if you're listening to this on YouTube, please smash that subscribe button. If you're listening to this on Apple, subscribe. Smash that subscribe button as well. All the reviews that you guys can give help. We love making the show. It's been a lot of fun. We're just over 2 years here. We got big things going. This is the podcast is doing the best that it ever has since I started this a couple years ago. I can't thank you freaks enough for tuning in.
The bench at what, 598?
We're gonna hit number 600 on Monday.
Insane.
Yeah.
You're gonna wake up with a pep in your step on Monday.
Yeah. Well, it's all again, I do it because you freaks keep coming back. You masochists out there. I don't know why. But thank you for all your support. If you guys are liking it and want to get a shout out on here, tftc.io/contribute. We've got more videos coming. We've got more big plans on the horizon. We've got more good guests coming as well. Yeah, it's just fun. Happy fall. I'm like happy on this Thursday.
Fuck yes. Stay humble, stack sets.
Peace and love, freaks.